Welcome to Multifamily Real Estate Investing, presented by Mara Poling. My name is Pat Poling. I'm the founder and CEO of Mara Poling, and I am very happy to be with you today as we kick off Season 8 of Multifamily Real Estate Investing, presented by Mara Poling. We are so grateful to the thousands and thousands and thousands of you out there that have not only participated in our podcasts and our avid listeners, but to the, again, thousands and thousands of you that have reached out and contacted us directly, come to the webinars, done all the other great things that we hope you all find value in. So thank you very much for all of that. Excited for what will be coming this year. And we are going to be kicking this year off with a topic that is always of great interest, and that is taxes. We are beginning today a five-part series. I don't know that it's necessarily going to run sequentially right in a row, all five. We may throw some other topics in along the way, so maybe over the next 6 to 8 weeks, we get through all five, but we're going to do five sessions on taxes. The first, today's session, is all about the tax advantages, not only of real estate investing, but of multifamily real estate investing, and why that's such a nice benefit on top of the security and stability and the returns, and also why it's really the least important of all of those. And so that's what today's topic is going to be. In the next coming weeks, we're going to take a look at your K-1. And if you don't get a K-1 because you have your own asset that you manage yourself, well, you really do get a K-1. It's just, it's not that particular form, but you get the exact same information and the same tax experience. And so we want to spend some time going through that. We're going to have a session on depreciation, on how that works, why it is the way it is, on cost segregation, on acceleration. We're going to have a session where we talk about tax deferral and tax avoidance and how those potentially play into your investment strategy. And then we're going to wrap things up with a topic that I think is really valuable to go through, because we get a lot of questions from folks about potential changes over time to the tax code. And the tax code absolutely not only can, but will change over time. If you look historically, where were we 5 years ago, or 10 or 20 or 40 years ago? We're in a different place today. The core tax advantages and incentives for investors in real estate have remained consistent throughout that time. And we would make the argument that that will be something that likely continues into the future, and not just to the benefit of those of us that invest in real estate, to the benefit, though, of everyone in society. Whether you are a tenant yourself, right? So you live in an apartment or in a rental property, or you have a business and you rent the space that you operate in, or you have a job and you work in a business that rents the space they operate in, or you are a consumer and you purchase things from businesses that are in spaces that are rented, even if they are rented from themselves, how is it that that is actually a benefit to everyone? And that's how we're going to wrap this entire series up. So I hope that you'll join us for that. As I said, I don't know that it'll be every single Tuesday for the next five Tuesdays. There may be a week or two in there where we throw in some other content, but that's what we're going to do when we talk about taxes. So thank you again for joining us. If you have any questions, as always, about any of the content that we offer, shoot me an email, pat@marapoling.com. I strongly encourage you, take a swing by the Learning Center at marapoling.com. Our 2024 Multifamily Real Estate Outlook is coming up in just a couple of weeks. We would love to have you participate. You can register at the Learning Center under the webinars link. And the big benefit of registering is this, is you'll receive a copy of the presentation in advance of the session. And the session will not only be recorded, which it is for everyone's benefit, but you'll get priority access to it. So if you register, even if you know right now that that time won't work for you, go ahead and register. That gives you the opportunity to have first access to that recording, as well as to get a copy of the presentation. If you are listening to this in February or March, and you think, gee, I missed it. No, you didn't. Go to the Multifamily Real Estate channel and you'll find the recording there. And if you'd like a copy of the presentation, shoot me an email, pat@marapoling.com. Okay, so let's dive in. Season 8, Episode 1, Tax Advantages of Multifamily Real Estate Investing. So what exactly are the benefits? You know, specifically, what do I get as an investor, as a real estate investor, and in particular, a multifamily investor? What are the benefits I get being an investor from a tax standpoint? Well, there's a couple of benefits. So one, and this is true however you invest, right? So if you invest actively, meaning you purchase assets and own them yourselves and operate them, and you meet all the criteria to be an active investor, which actually brings up a wonderful point. You should have a tax advisor. If you don't have a tax advisor, ideally a CPA that does your taxes, I would strongly encourage you, before you do anything in the real estate investing space, get a tax advisor. Taxes change regularly. There is no way to stay on top of it, even if you are a tax person yourself. Doctors don't treat themselves. Have somebody that can help you think about this. It's good to have that third party that you can bounce ideas off of and work on strategies. So if you think you might be active or qualify to be active, and there's some specific tax benefits associated with that, you want to confirm that with your tax advisor or with your CPA. If you are a passive investor, you have invested passively and you get a K-1, like I mentioned a moment ago, you get the exact same benefits, right? And we'll talk about those now. So real estate is a wonderful investment. We purchase properties that we know people need. They fill a niche, right? It's a retail space, it's an office space, it's a warehouse distribution facility, or in our instance, it's home. It's a living space for someone. It's an apartment building. And so when we invest in that apartment building, we're buying a business. And let's, for example, say that this business generates $1 million a year in revenue. Well, on average, if we generated $1 million a year in revenue, we would spend $450,000, $500,000, $550,000, something like that in operating expenses. Taxes, insurance, payroll, marketing materials, repairs and maintenance to the property, all that sort of stuff. So we'd be left with about $500,000 in operating income. That's the net operating income. We don't pay tax on that because there's still some more deductions that occur. So we use leverage on our properties. Most of you that are invested in real estate are invested in investments that use leverage. If you own properties yourself, you may or may not have leverage. I know an objective for many individual investors is to own their properties outright. That's a personal decision. You certainly can make an argument that there is a very, very, very modest incremental risk by having a small amount of leverage, and yet you can get significantly higher returns. And that is a personal decision for people to make. If you have leverage in the investment you're involved in, then there's an interest expense associated with that, further reducing that potential taxable income. If you've invested with a firm like Marapoling, you're going to have some management fees that will get paid. And so that further reduces that income. We want to invest in assets that are going to be successful. So we don't really expect that number to get to zero and for us to have a loss. We would actually expect to see some degree of gain on an annual basis. So that million that turned into half a million might get down, and we're just making numbers up here for our purposes. It might get down to $100,000. Well, that's $100,000 that we would be subject to tax on. Okay, Pat, you said there's tax advantages to this. I'm not seeing any advantage yet. Well, one of the things we are able to do with real estate that you aren't able to do with other types of investment is we are able to depreciate the asset, meaning we can write off the portion of the investment that has a lifespan associated with it. I'll give you a couple examples. Mini blinds. Everybody knows what a mini blind is. You've all seen them. You probably have some in your home. And nobody would make an argument that mini blinds last forever. Actually, nobody would make an argument that they last more than a brief number of years. 5 years is actually the number that the IRS will agree to. And so, over the course of 5 years, we would expect that we will have to replace each of the mini blinds that we have. So, the cost of that mini blind can be written off over that period of time. And the same is true for the appliances, the refrigerator, the washing machine and dryer and dishwashers. The same is true of the roof. Roofs do not last forever. The same is true of the structure of the building. The building itself has a lifespan associated with it as far as the IRS is concerned. Now, you may notice as I went through that list, a number of those items really become more and more robust and actually have a greater longevity and potentially a longevity that's longer than what the IRS might say. All of that ultimately means that while there is depreciation we experience, and there will be some replacement costs that we incur, the value of our properties aren't tied to the cost of the roof or the mini blinds. The value is tied to the amount of operating income we can generate. And the more operating income we generate, the more valuable our building is. So we can buy a property for $10 million, depreciate it by some amount. That depreciation is a write-off, meaning our $100,000, if we were able to take $500,000 in depreciation that year, we've now lost $400,000 that particular year. How does that benefit us? Well, in a couple of ways. One, because I have a loss, I'm not exposed to any tax on that $100,000 that we generated. Now, does that mean there's no tax exposure? Very possibly, there could be some tax exposure. And that has to do with your basis in the investment and the size of the loan and a number of other factors that are involved. And that's why you want to have a tax advisor. Generally speaking, and this is how you're going to hear us talk for the next several weeks as we go over taxes. Generally speaking, that $100,000 that's generated, which is essentially cash that can be distributed, isn't taxable. Because we have this overall tax loss that we see from depreciation. And so that's why we're going to have an entire session on depreciation. But we basically can lose money. Now, some of you will be able to take that loss and use it to offset other types of income that you have, maybe other passive income or potentially other active income, again, depending upon how your investment is structured and whether you're an actual active investor, or if you're a passive investor. And again, you want to talk to your CPA about that. But think about that. We're able to purchase an asset, a business that we can grow in value. And as we grow it in value, we actually can write part of that investment off, generating tax protection for us on the income that we are generating. Think about other kinds of assets that depreciate. Let's say that we, instead of buying a real estate business, a apartment complex, let's say we bought a landscaping business. And so now we've got a crew of landscapers that work for us, and we've got some pickup trucks and some trailers and some mowers and other sorts of equipment. Well, that equipment has a lifespan, and we can depreciate it, and we take that depreciation. Those trucks, though, don't grow in value. And when it comes time to replace them, it actually costs more to replace them, again, generally speaking, than what we actually were able to save from a depreciation standpoint. So that depreciation is actually a real expense. It's not just a paper activity. It's a real expense. Now, could I grow the value of my landscaping business? Sure, I could. But I'd have to do that by either charging more, which is the equivalent of raising rents, or by growing the size of the business, which means buying more equipment. So equipment-heavy businesses do have depreciation. It doesn't work the same way depreciation works in real estate, because we've got this wonderful ability to grow the value of our investment without necessarily having to put more dollars into the depreciable base. And as I said, we're going to talk more about that in the future. When we sell an asset, let's say we've held an asset for several years, when we sell an asset and we have to pay the tax because we've been deferring tax, that $100,000 that we made, we didn't pay the tax on it. We've been deferring it. When we sell and we pay the tax on that $100,000, we don't pay ordinary income tax rates, 25% or 30 or 38 or whatever bracket you happen to be in, plus whatever state tax you potentially have exposure to. We get long-term capital gains treatment for it. And that is, for almost everyone out there, a more favorable tax rate than ordinary rates. And for some, the long-term capital gains rate can be zero. And again, talk to your tax advisor about that. There are some very specific circumstances in which you might fall into that category. And if you do, congratulations and good for you. What if you didn't want to pay that tax? Well, then you can do something called a sale exchange, a 1031, also called a striker exchange. So when you execute that exchange, you take the gain that you had in this original investment and you move it into a new asset, which is larger by definition, by requirement. And because it's larger, you potentially have some new depreciation to play with, meaning you can, in an ideal world, and we think this is achievable in many instances, you can start losing money again. So, about the time that you are to a point where you may have actual tax exposure in your investment, it's possible to roll over into a new investment, a new asset via 1031, and to do that in a way that continues to defer that tax. That's tax deferral. There is also a potential for something called tax avoidance, and that's tied to something called the step up in basis. And we're going to do an entire session on that and how that potentially works for you, as well as some special tax potential opportunities around using retirement accounts for investing. So if you look at the kinds of assets you could have in your portfolio, and you probably do, you've got some stocks, you've got some bonds, maybe you own, do some mortgage lending or something like that. Maybe you've got some commodities. None of those, if they grow in value, can you do a 1031 on? None of those generate depreciation that you can use to shelter the income you have from that asset. If you do sell, you get a capital gains break, for example, on a long-term stock investment, so a stock that you've held more than a year. So that's very similar, obviously, to what we can do in real estate, but you can't do that 1031 rollover. So every time you move in and out of a holding, you're potentially exposed to the tax man. And what that means is you lose that interest-free loan from the federal government that allows us to continue to grow assets significantly. The Marpolin growth funds are structured in such a way that they highly take advantage of that opportunity. Our total return funds and our other investments also were similarly structured to take advantage of 1031s and to utilize depreciation in a very appropriate way so that we can manage our tax exposure over time. Now, the last item I want to mention about this is our introduction to taxes is, as you all know, if you've been listeners for any length of time, we use a model based on total return. Even our growth funds are still based on total return. They're just designed a little bit differently. And the five elements in a total return are security and stability. We consider those to be the utmost importance. We will always be willing to trade certain levels of return for increased security and stability. You can't make money if you lose your principal. So we want to invest in good quality assets and manage them well. And then we want to optimize the next two elements in the total return, which is the cash yield and the equity growth. And again, some of our investments are a little more oriented towards one than the other. Both of those components exist, cash and equity growth. The cherry on top are these tax advantages. We list them in that sequence because that is the priority we believe they should be managed in. First and foremost, security and stability. Next, we look to optimize returns over longer periods of time. And then finally, we want to take full advantage of those elements in the tax code that are available to us. However, we don't think it ever makes sense to make a decision based on taxes. If you can get two investments side by side or two strategies side by side, and they check each of the prior four boxes, security, stability, cash, equity growth, identically, then yes, taxes can be the determining factor. But for example, we don't think it makes sense when selling an asset and purchasing a new asset that if we can't find the right asset for the purchase to complete that 1031, we don't think it makes sense buying a suboptimal asset just to complete the 1031. Again, we're violating that security and stability component. So taxes are fantastic. They're a wonderful benefit to having real estate, in particular multifamily real estate, in your specific portfolio. And they aren't the be all end all. They're simply part of the total return. So I hope you found this introduction valuable and interesting. And as I said, we're going to talk about some really exciting topics as we go forward. We're going to help people understand their K-1s. We're going to go into depreciation in more detail. We'll talk about deferral and avoidance. And then ultimately, and again, none of this is a secret. Ultimately, we want to talk about how this benefits everyone that is involved, all the stakeholders, which includes tenants and non-tenants alike, the average consumer that is out there. Why it is good for everyone that the tax code is structured in the way that it is. So I hope you found this week's session valuable. Very excited for what we've got coming ahead in 2024. Don't forget to go over to marapolling.com. MARAPOLING.com and register for the 2024 Outlook. Thank you again, and please join me next week for our next episode of Multifamily Real Estate Investing presented by Mara Poling.